From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by 2 lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Everfast on the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness.
Bricks and Mortar pumps with March to the Arch, nonetheless closing in with 2.5 lengths to make up and a 16th to go. It's Curbon in front, Clyde's Image. Bricks and Mortar finding stride late in the game, and Bricks and Mortar's up in time.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Tacitus is closing through an opening down toward the rail, into the final 16th. It is Tex in front. Tacitus on the inside is second. He's trying to come and get Tex. The Ortiz brothers, Tex on the outside. Tacitus at the rail. And it is Tex and around Ortiz in the Jim Dandy.
And Vino Rosso edging away from Gift Box. He's coming into his own. And Vino Rosso at age 4 goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Baron and Pontiff, that's Mike Penna and Jude Feld, trackside on another beautiful morning here in Saratoga Springs, New York, as we take the show back on the road, and for good reason. 5 stakes races on the program this afternoon. 3 of those are graded. 2 are grade 1s, the grade 1 test and the grade 1 Whitney, which is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. This is all part of the Fasig-Tipton Festival of Racing, and Fasig-Tipton focused on what is going to be, at least expected to be, another strong yearling sale, the Saratoga Sale, which takes place just across the street, just across Union Avenue at the Humphrey S. Finney Sales Pavilion Monday and Tuesday night. That begins at 6:30 Eastern both nights. We'll have coverage for you beginning at 7 o'clock Eastern, and we'll take you pretty much gavel to gavel. And, JT, this is one of those times that, you know, you talk about this place being a vacation destination and families coming here and the atmosphere in Saratoga being unparalleled to many other racing venues across the country. But you throw that Saratoga Sale into the mix, and now you've got the entire horse industry here as well. It's a special weekend, a special 3 or 4 days of racing.
Yeah, it's certainly a busy weekend, and there's a lot of work involved. It's not all fun and games. The sale is very expensive, and it's a select sale, so you've got the top echelon of owners and trainers looking for their next champion, and so there's definitely some work involved. There'll be a lot of things going on Monday and Tuesday that people will not be spending their time at the lake. They will be back there scouting out the horses, and a lot of action. It's an exciting time to be in Saratoga. Sale week is always great. The racing's usually fantastic, and the sale is just a blockbuster.
Yeah, and the Hall of Fame inductions took place here yesterday in that same sales pavilion, the Humphrey S. Finney Pavilion, just across the street. And individual that was inducted was Mary Lou Whitney, and of course rightfully so. I don't think anybody would have an issue with that, and somebody who has meant so much to the game and to this particular part of the country here in Saratoga Springs. She's a deserving Hall of Fame inductee, and it was a wonderful ceremony yesterday, and today many people will be remembering Mary Lou, who passed away just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, she was a great lady in many, many respects, and meant a lot to the city of Saratoga. Really put Saratoga on the map. The racing has always been exciting here, but Saratoga was just kind of a dust bowl, quiet little town. And now it's a destination, a bucket list destination for many people. And she's a big part of that. And she's done so many philanthropic things for the city and cultural things. And so Saratoga is her home, and everybody in town knows who she is and recognizes what she's done.
Somebody else who will be remembered on this Whitney Day is trainer Rick Violet, who also passed away this year. And Rick is, of course, the man who trained Diversify to win this race a year ago. He will not be with us this year, obviously, and a lot of people will be thinking about Rick on this day, too.
Yeah, Rick was a guy who worked tirelessly for the horsemen. He was a trainer that that took Horsemen's affairs to the next level and really worked hard for people on the backside and very involved and a wonderful guy. I mean, every time we had him on the show, he was just a delight to interview, and his insights and his knowledge of thoroughbreds and racing and just the general horsemanship of Rick Violet is missed, but all the work that he did for the trainers and grooms was, you know, unparalleled, really.
Today's Whitney is a race that, much like the test, I mean, steeped in history. When you look at the test and you say, okay, well, this is the 94th renewal of that Grade 1 race and then the 92nd renewal of the Whitney. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic division. It's a race that's been won by so many of the greats that we've seen in the sport. Easy Goer, Dr. Fager, Tom Fool, Invisor came here and won the race, Slew of Gold, Ali Dar, the list goes on and on. This is also the race that is known for that famous upset by Onion, who defeated Secretariat in the 1973 running, who was trained by the chief, the giant killer, Alan Jerkins. His son, Jimmy Jerkins, is looking for a victory in the race today with
Preservationist,
and he'll be on the top of everybody's list if he can pull off the victory here today.
Yeah, his last race was very impressive. He got huge pace and speed figures. He figures to be a big part of this race, and he's a horse that he's 6 years old, and he hasn't run that many times because he's had little issues back and forth over the years, but he's at the top of his game right now, and they've always been high on him, and he's living up to those expectations. And it's really a tribute to Jimmy Jerkins about how patient he's been with this horse and how much confidence he's had in him, that even when he has a setback, he doesn't worry about it. He just gives him the time he needs and goes on with him. So it's a really cool story, and he's a beautiful horse.
Yeah, 8-horse field in the Whitney. Preservationist will break from the far outside, number 8. He's 3-1 on the morning line. The favorite is the Bob Baffert-trained McKenzie, who is maybe the top horse in the country, at least in terms of what the pollsters think. You vote in the Breeders' Cup poll for the Breeders' Cup Classic contenders, and McKenzie's been number 1 on that list for a while. He has to prove it here today.
Yeah, well, I haven't put him there, but other people have, and I'm not the only vote.
Yeah, obviously. He wouldn't be number 1 if it was up to you.
No, he would not.
I'm not a big McKenzie fan either. I mean, here's a horse that's won one race out of 4 starts here in 2019. That was in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs. Nice win. And he's been second in those other 3, so it's not like he's been a total bust, but he hasn't gotten over the hump yet. Can he do it here today?
I think it's possible for him to do it today. I think we interviewed Mike Smith yesterday afternoon on Express Bet Radio, and Mike was talking about the fact that they haven't seen the best of him, and I think that's true. He seems to be a horse that is improving with age, but he still seems like he's unaware of what his real job is. And I think when he figures that out, when he finally figures it all out, he is going to be a force to be reckoned with. But he's just learning the ropes. And, you know, a lot of times people in racing get impatient because, you know, a horse shows a lot of ability and they get excited and they want him to be good. Everybody wants to have the next champion or see the next champion. So he's one of those. He's like a rookie prospect in baseball. Back that gets drafted number 1 in the NFL. Everybody wants him to live up to those expectations, but sometimes they're unrealistic, and he's still learning the ropes. And Mike said he's coming around. He's starting to show that he's learning what he really needs to do. And I think with that in mind, he's certainly capable of winning this race.
We're going to hear those comments from Mike Smith coming up in the second half of the program. You'll also hear from Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, who will be aboard Vino Rosso. Johnny looking to equal fellow Hall of Famers Pat Day and Jerry Baddeley with 5 wins in the Whitney if he can get Vino Rosso home in front later this afternoon. You have Thunder Snow, the 2-time Dubai World Cup winner, who is the richest thoroughbred in training with more than $16 million in earnings, but he's yet to win in North America. This would be a big statement for Thunder Snow if he can pull off the victory here today. Here's the poll question for you. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter. You can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook if you want to weigh in and let us know, is this year's Breeders' Cup Classic winner competing in today's Whitney Stakes? Pretty simple. Yes or no? And if you check yes, then please specify who you think that might be. Who is the horse that can compete in today's Whitney and go on and win the Breeders' Cup Classic? And doesn't even have to be the winner of today's race, but is the Breeders' Cup Classic winner running in today's Whitney? That's what we want to know. You can go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and let us know your thoughts. Over the course of the next couple of hours, we're going to cover a lot of ground. We will preview that Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale with Max Hodge, the Vice President of Client Services at Fasig, and Jesse Ullery, one of the new announcers at Fasig Tipton. They will be with us coming up at 8:15 Eastern. Heedley and Price Bell from Millridge and Nakoma will be with us at 8:35. They'll tell you all about their consignment and about the success that they've had, and we'll talk to them about the state of the yearling market right now. Where are we with this yearling market, and what does that mean as a racing fan looking ahead to the future of the sport? Hour number two is going to feature those interviews with or at least sound bites with Johnny V and with Mike Smith. We'll be joined by Michael Dubb, who is the owner of Whitney contender Monongahela, the Pennsylvania bred, and will be joined by Don Little Jr. from Centennial Farms Preservationist, their color bearer in this afternoon's Whitney. So a lot of things to come, plus our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris and the return of our Philly Focus segment presented by Paramount Sales. It's all ahead right here on the Equine Forum, live from Saratoga on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
The Maryland thoroughbred industry. For over 200 years, the innovative leader, Maryland was the first to have organized racing in North America and the first to establish a state breeders association. Maryland created the first thoroughbred yearling show, the first state magazine, the first state breeder incentive development program, the first international race to feature horses from four continents, and the first $1 million one-day stallion stakes event. The Maryland thoroughbred industry is the innovative leader.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Brody's Cause, a grade one winner at 2 and 3 by Giants Causeway.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run from deep in the pack to pull the upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
His final time of 143.27 in Keeneland's Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity is the fastest running on dirt since 2000, while defeating Grade 1 winner, Exaggerator. Look for his first crop yearling selling this summer. Brody's Cause, standing at Spendthrift.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Rushing fall, trying to shake away here with 1 furlong to run. Daddy is a legend, full out second. Environs is finishing well, so is Bo Recall on the far outside. Then it's Belle of A, but it's Rushing Fall, and she's too good. She wins the Longines Just a Game.
Sipican Harbor is closing down the center of the track as well, and then it's reflected behind them. Here comes Sipican Harbor. Sipican Harbor, she's the real deal. She won the Spinaway.
Stormy Liberal and World of Trouble digs in. These two will clear their competition. Then it's Disco partner Will Call and Chantaline coming to the final 16th. World of Trouble on the outside. Stormy Liberal heads coming up and down to the wire. Stormy Liberal back to back in the turf sprint.
Well, that montage of three Grade 1 winners, Rushing Falls, Sipican Harbor, and Stormy Liberal, the three horses that are featured on the cover of this year's Saratoga Sale catalog. As we told you, that sale begins Monday. It will kick off Monday and Tuesday, and 6:30 is when the sale begins. We'll hit the airwaves at 7 o'clock, and we'll bring you coverage from 7 to 10 Eastern on Sirius 219, XM 201, and of course, you can stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. That coverage presented by our friends at Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and by the Maryland Thoroughbred Breeders Association. And Jude, let me tell you, that sale is loaded. We're waiting on Max Hodge and Jesse Ullery to make their way over to the set here. We are positioned trackside at Saratoga for the Whitney. We'll talk about the sale, but let's just preview real quick what's coming up this afternoon. 5 o'clock Eastern, you and I return. We have our Saturdays at Saratoga broadcast series. Will be joined by the Big A, Anthony Stabile, as we bring you that exclusive radio coverage of the test in the Whitney. 5 to 6, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun show. Those are two races that everybody knows. Whenever you see a horse that won the test or the Whitney in a sales catalog, you know, you know that's a good horse.
Yeah.
There's no question in your mind.
Yep.
There's no bums that ever win the test or the Whitney. So, you know, those kind of races are so great because they mean so much to people in racing and to the owners and trainers that were participating in those races. And it's just a great event today.
Horses continuing the morning training. The main track is fast. We did have a little brief shower move through early this morning around 6:15, 6:20 Eastern time. No problems there, though. The main track is fast. The turf should be firm for today. The weather's supposed to be great. They're calling for sunny skies and temperatures in the low 80s. Should be no problem there. And, you know, one of the cool things about Saratoga is you get all of the fans that come out in the morning and watch the horses train. And they're not just here. They're over across the street on the Oklahoma. And you see families. You see, you know, the parents with their kids. And they're all taking pictures. And the kids are getting close to the horses. That's what this game is all about.
Yeah, the man with the little dog over there. That dog is so cute. And he's really looking around like, what the heck is this? He looks like a
puppy. Look at that little dog. Who are you going to scare with that thing?
You're not trying to scare anybody.
Well, I mean, look at him. I mean, he doesn't look very intimidating, right?
No, but he's just checking it all out. Like, what's going on?
He's probably going to come over here and nip at
my ankles. You guys ought to see if you can sign him tonight. He'd bring a lot of money, that little dog, I think. He's pretty cute.
We'll go see if we can sign him up.
What's up, boys? The Fasig Tipton contingent has arrived.
Everything's great. We've just walked over from the sales grounds. It's extremely busy already over there this morning, and a lot of nice horses.
He's Max Hodge. Jesse Ullery is with you as well, a new announcer over at Fasig Tipton, and welcome, brother.
Thank you. This is actually this is only the second time I've been to Saratoga, actually, and
you're
the first
kidding.
Time I've been to the sales. So it's quite a way to break my maiden.
What do you think?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, like the first 30 seconds you walk onto the sales grounds here and being right across the street from the racetrack, it's just you get the feeling right away, just right away. So it's a very special place. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you know, it's neat. I had a chance to stop by and visit with Pat Costello from Paramount Sales yesterday, and we sat outside of his barn, did a little interview, and I looked up above all the stalls, and there's names, you know, like Union Rags and Deterra and Callback and all these outstanding horses that he has sold here at Saratoga. And when you walk around to all the different barns, you see those signs up top. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, it's something we do special here to mark those stalls. It's also something sometimes the locals like a little much, so we have to take inventory occasionally to go see which ones are missing. So if you're listening out there, please don't do that anymore.
You need to screw them down like pictures in a bar, right?
You know what's funny? We hang our HRN banner up behind our broadcast location there, and nobody's ever touched the banner. That's not in high demand,
just
apparently.
Don't leave it up overnight.
Yeah. It could end up in somebody's bedroom somewhere, some college dorm or something.
Yeah, a bit of a smaller catalog this year than we saw in 2018, kind of comparable to what we saw in 2017, actually. Talk about the what people can expect when they come out to the Saratoga sale, Max.
Right. Last year we had a little over 250. This year we're a little over 220. And we don't set out when we start our inspections with a number in mind. We go out and for this sale, you know, it's a pretty tight bullseye when we go out and start the inspections. So we just take the horses in the sale that fit and meet the criteria that we feel like are going to sell well here. So that number varies from year to year. And, you know, when you go over there, you'll see exceptional physicals with solid pedigrees and just, you know, top-class horses. Last year we had a record average of over 360,000, a record median of 300,000. So, you know, coming off of a great sale last year and hoping for the best this year.
So people don't understand exactly how it works to get into a sale like the Saratoga sale. But the people that own the horses that want to consign them, they nominate them. And then you guys go through and pick out the ones that you think have the most potential to be successful at your sale. And that's like a process that begins early on, like around March, I think. Is that correct when you guys go
that's
out?
That's correct, yes.
It's so the first time you look. But you look at them several times. It's not just a one-shot deal.
Right. It's a selected sale, so there's a nomination process. So people will submit the horses to us that they want us to come look at. We'll schedule a farm visit and go with a team of inspectors from Fasig-Tipton to visit those farms and take a look at the horses and see which one we feel like which ones meet the criteria, and then, you know, begin that process of evaluating that horse throughout the spring until it's time to catalog around Derby time.
Jesse, I know you spend a lot of time doing your homework, poring over the catalog, looking at the entries, the pedigrees, and various aspects of the horses that we'll see go under the gavel Monday and Tuesday night. What are some of the horses that have stood out to you, some of the things you're looking forward to most over those two nights?
Well, it's a very deep catalog from that perspective as far as the quality. I mean, I think every single offering that's in there is of quality from a pedigree perspective and a physical perspective as well. But you have established sires in there. You have the Mischiefs. You have horses like War Fronts and so on and so forth that are at the top of the commercial list and at the top of the general sires list as well. But then you also have some freshman sires in there. There's some Run Happies that are in the book. We have some Exaggerators in there as well. So there's really a good cross-section of horses. And plus, we have the international appeal. I mean, with this weekend, we had the second leg of the Turf Tiara Stakes here, and then we have the second of the Turf Triple Crown here today. So there's some international appeal in town. Aiden O'Brien had a few runners in the race yesterday. We actually have a Zoffany and a Galileo in the catalog as well. So international appeal, but also we have that domestic proven dirt form as well.
Well, you've got some American Pharaohs too, and he's creating quite a buzz. I imagine those horses are going to get a lot of inspections.
Oh, no question. I mean, you look through around all the barns, and you see, you know, horses by varying sires, but American Pharaohs have been standing out. I mean, you'll be standing there talking to some individuals, and they'll see a horse walk by. What was that? Well, that was an American Pharaoh. So it's. I mean, you do get that, but you could say that for all the horses. People are, when they're out inspecting, they see other horses in the courtyard area, and I think that's what is also part of the neat setup of this facility is that everything is right here together. You don't have to walk too far to see very quality horses, and they're literally right around the next corner.
It's really kind of rare, too, isn't it, that a horse of the caliber of American Pharaoh comes out with a big splash right off the bat? I mean, there's always a lot of hype around, you know, those type of horses and what kind of sires they could be or something, but this horse is actually proving that he's the real deal.
Oh, no question. And I mean, results not only domestically but internationally. He's had a group stakes winner in France already. So to have that success that early is pretty incredible. I mean, I think it speaks to the volume of him as an individual, and he seems to be passing on the trace. Everybody talks about how great of a mind they have, how smart the horses are, how well they train on. So that's really an interesting thing, and you're right. You hope that they live up to the hype, and so far he's held up to his end of the bargain.
Yeah, and there are a couple of exceptional physicals over there by American Pharaoh. Horses started showing yesterday, and got a chance to look at a couple, and people are going to be very pleased with those.
Yeah, American Pharaoh, Medaglia d'Oro were big stars at last year's sale. There were $5 million yearlings that were sold, million-dollar plus yearlings that were sold last year, three by Medaglia d'Oro, two by American Pharaoh, and the two by American Pharaoh came on night number one. So maybe we'll see some more fireworks from the Triple Crown winner this year as well. Max, this is when you talk about the Saratoga sale, and we tend to mention this a lot during our covers, the Saratoga sale, the top-ranked North American yearling sale by percentage of Grade 1 winners and graded stakes winners produced from horses sold. That's a statistic that that you've been able to boast for a long time in conjunction with the sale. You have to be very proud.
Yeah, that's something that we key on in our marketing, and we're very proud of the success of these horses that people come buy from the Saratoga Selected Sale and go on to have great success. So that's something we, as a sales company, hang our hat on.
There's that question, is it easier to get to the top or to stay on top? And when you're on top with a sale like this, I'm going to ask you that question. Is it easier to get there or easier now to, or more difficult to stay up top?
Well, I think we live in the United States of amnesia sometimes. So. What have you done for me lately?
It's consistent. It's every year. And you get the major players here every year in terms of the human stars of the sport and the people that have the money and the interest in spending money on quality yearlings like this. And that's impressive, too.
Sure. I think at a horse sale, a lot of times it's very important when the principal, the man or woman that's actually spending the money are in the house, and here you get those people, and that's when good things happen for horse sellers.
And you get the other side of the coin, too. You get the locals that come out and support. And I know that doesn't necessarily help you guys financially, but I think it creates kind of a buzz, and everybody in town here gets excited about your sale and talks about it just like they were involved in the sport. And I think that really helps the whole atmosphere, and everybody gets dressed up and comes out for night one, and it's almost like a Hollywood kind of buzz when you do the opening night of Saratoga.
It's a very unique atmosphere, and I think it's something the horse business needs more of. You know, it's an event. Jude, I've used your term often. I think you say it's a large cocktail party that happens to have a horse sale.
I'll never forget when we had a chance to visit with Terrence Collier the first year that we broadcast the sale. Terrence, one of the announcers here at the sale, and Terrence told us that what you want with an auction is drunken debauchery. That's the way he described it. I said, what a great way to look at it, right? Get people a little loosened up and have some fun, right? And that sale is really fun. At the heart, when horses start getting close to that $1 million mark, and you can hear the buzz kind of throughout the entire sales grounds, so you can feel the energy. That's neat. Jesse is somebody who is going to be reading the pedigrees of these horses before the auctioneers take over and the bidding begins. When you have a catalog with this much quality, does that make your job a little bit easier, or is it more difficult in some respects?
Yeah, I don't know that it makes it easier or any more difficult. I mean, luckily we have the product here that really sells itself too. So we're just, I look at it at any time that a horse is in the ring. If I own this individual, how would I want to sell the horse? What would I highlight to the crowd? What would I want them to know? And so we do. I mean, we have established a personal relationship with all the consigners and the owners, and we want to do our very best to market their horse in the best light possible. And hopefully it is fun. Hopefully they're having fun along with the spectators in the crowd. And it can be a tough industry. It's full of ups and downs, as we know. So we want to make it fun and have a great time while we're doing it.
Yeah, because there's really nothing more boring than reading a catalog page. Right? I mean, honestly, I mean, it's like, okay.
Well, I mean,
but you have a knack of making it exciting and getting people interested, and that's what they pay you for, is to generate that interest.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's fascinating to me. Pedigrees have always been just very, very interesting to me. So I'm very fortunate that I was able to have this career and to be here and to have the best pedigrees and the best horses that we have to offer in North America is very special, and it's a great opportunity. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be a fun couple of nights. Max, before we let you guys go, recap what people can expect, some of the particulars of the sale when they show up Monday and Tuesday night.
So it's listed as starting at 6:30, but we're famous for kicking off a little bit late. So don't worry if you're not.
The bar will be open, though.
The bar will be open.
Yeah, by the way, you guys were a little late. You didn't stop by and get us any Bloody Marys. It's usually customary. Well,
This is true. I apologize.
Not for me. I don't drink Bloody Marys. I can't drink that stuff. I'll just stick with the vodka part.
Right.
Yeah, well, 6:30. It'll kick off both nights. Our coverage begins 7 o'clock, as we mentioned, Sirius 219, XM 201. It will stream on our website at horseracingradio.net. It will also stream in conjunction with the video of the sale at phasictipton.com, so folks can get a chance to listen there, too.
Right, and we're going to put up a little button that links back to your all's coverage as well, so people can find that easy. So just go to phasictipton.com, go to the catalog page, and the video will be right on top of that, and just hit the play button and be like you're right here.
We'll have Miss Connecticut Acacia Courtney as part of our team as well. She'll be back with us again this year. I noticed that you don't put us on TV anymore, but I got Acacia back now, so I'm hoping maybe.
The feedback for the two of you was.
More Acacia, please.
Hey, that was the best I ever looked. I use that as my Twitter picture. I never looked better than
that's
that.
That's as good as it gets for him.
That's it. They're gonna put that up at my funeral. That's the best shot I got.
Well, guys, listen, we appreciate the visit here this morning. We're going to talk more Saratoga Sale with Heedley Bell and Price Bell from Millridge Nakoma. They're going to join us in the next segment. So really appreciate you stopping by. All the best, and we'll look forward to getting over there and putting your best foot forward and providing that coverage Monday and Tuesday night.
Thanks for having us. We'll see you Monday night.
Much. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And Max and Jesse, like all the guests who appear on our program, will indeed receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty. We're back to visit with Heedley and Price Bell right after this.
On an early June day in 1945, a set of circumstances was culminated and climaxed by a win in the Kentucky Derby. In 1943, just before the opening of the very first yearling sale ever held at Keeneland, a contractor from Alabama was lolling about the lobby of Lexington, Kentucky's Hotel Lafayette. He met a fellow contractor from Tennessee who asked what he was doing there. The tall Alabaman, Mr. Fred C. Hooper, said, quote, "I thought I'd buy a couple of yearlings and find out what this racehorse business is all about." His friend, J. Warfield Rogers of Memphis, Tennessee, had been racing and breeding for some time and, of course, offered his assistance. Hooper asked if Rogers knew of a good trainer. Mr. Rogers said indeed he did, and Hooper then asked if he could be introduced to him. Rogers and Hooper met at the sale the next day, and as Ivan Park strolled by, Rogers indicated that he was one of the trainers he would certainly recommend. The two were introduced and spent the rest of the day together, with no agreement reached between them, looking at yearlings going into the auction arena, but neither bidding nor buying. They knew absolutely nothing of each other, but took the pains to carefully check each other out to mutual satisfaction, I might add, and the next afternoon, August 11, 1943, they sat together at the sale pavilion and patiently waited until the 34th yearling was led into the sales arena. Hooper jumped into the action and quietly and determinedly bid to $10,200, for which he got the colt in which he was interested. He was now the owner of a high-priced thoroughbred. That youngster was put in the hands of former riding great Ivan Park to train, and on June 9, 1945, 2 years later, the casual introduction came to its climax. It was Derby Day in Louisville. 70,000 fans on hand neath the hallowed twin spires to watch the 71st run for the Roses on a very muddy racetrack. Hooper's horse was installed, too, in the crowded old-fashioned paddock at Churchill, and Hooper and Park stood in front of it greeting well-wishers as their horse approached. The son of Sir Galahad III had his front legs bandaged, and the padding covered an extraordinarily thick padding of cotton, which stretched from pastern to just above the knee. As he passed bystanders, there was a strong odor of medication. Jeep, owned by Colonel C.V. Whitney, was in stall 3, and Colonel Whitney, Natalie, attired in his army uniform, bowed to Mr. Hooper by a way of exchanging the social amenities of the moment. Ivor Balding, manager of the Whitney farm, exchanged a few pleasantries with Mr. Hooper as well. Tommy Piat visited every stall and spoke to every owner and trainer. At stall 7, Piat chatted with Warren Wright, who had pot of luck in the field. Wright congratulated Piat on come and goes winning the Kentucky Oaks. Ben Jones, Wright's trainer, came up and said, quote, "If we can beat the Hooper colt, we can win it. I don't think we can. His work the other day was marvelous, and he didn't even draw a deep breath," end of quote. The order from the paddock judge came to saddle up. Bandages were removed from Hooper's horse, revealing blister scars on the ankles, and the strong smell of medication was unmistakable. The ankles looked good, but they had obviously been sweated. Trainer Ivan Park's hands were trembling while saddling the horse, Mr. Hooper standing calmly with arms crossed and watching his stalwart. "Riders up," came the call. And the rest, my friends, is history. On that muddy racetrack with 70,000 howling fans on hand, on June 9, 1945, Eddie Arcaro guided that horse to an uncontested wire-to-wire six-length win in rather easy fashion. That horse, the very first purchased by Fred C. Hooper, trained by Ivan Park, had fulfilled a dream. That thoroughbred, my friends, was Hoop Jr., and his owner's and trainer's story provide, indeed, a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Power.
Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
5/16 to run. Oscar Performance heads for home, joined by Mr. Haverkamp on the outside. Right behind them, Delta Prince, Stormy Antarctic. Oscar Performance and Mr. Haverkamp. Divisadero and Stormy Antarctic running on. Delta Prince behind. Oscar Performance in front. Oscar Performance and Mr. Haverkamp neck and neck. And down in third, Stormy Antarctic. But it's Oscar Performance shrugs them off. A gate-to-wire winner. Oscar Performance by a length and a half, Mr. Haverkamp, Stormy Antarctic, and Delta Prince. And then came Divisadero.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by our friends at Red Brand Fence here in the month of August. Oscar Performance, that was Robert Geller with the call of the Grade 1 Woodbine Mile, one of his signature performances, and there were so many in his career. He won 8 of 15 starts, earned more than $2.3 million. He is now standing at Mill Ridge in Lexington, Kentucky, and we are joined now by Heedley and Price Bell, who are with Mill Ridge and Nakoma. They're going to be busy selling horses, maybe the next Oscar Performance over at the Saratoga sale Monday and Tuesday night. Gentlemen, happy to have you on board again. Heedley, good morning.
Well, good morning. We love to be with you and Jude, and and love to hear that recaption of Oscar Performance's race. And it's become formful because Mr. Haverkamp won so well recently. So, yeah.
And also Delta Prince won the Maker's Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's two Grade 1 winners out of that race.
That's pretty good.
All right.
Yeah. Wouldn't have.
Looks even better now. Absolutely. It was great when it happened, but it looks even better now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were talking yesterday. The response to Oscar Performance in his first year at stud, just remarkable. You have to be very pleased.
We really are. You get a little bit of a late start, considering you retire after the Breeders' Cup and such like that. And in the end, we had 118 mares and 106 in foal for 90% conception, which is just really remarkable for a first-year stallion. he's syndicated, and the syndicate really supported him well, and we feel really very fortunate to have him at Mill Ridge.
What's your favorite Oscar performance moment?
Favorite Oscar performance moment was probably here at Saratoga when he broke his maiden. I was here hosting a friend's bachelor party, and we were in the paddock bar, and he's going round and around in the tree right in front of us, and we were alive in a show pool to like six. We were like starting to really get it building. He's going around and around, and it's like he's looking good. He was pretty fresh at that time. He'd had a start and had kind of gotten buried, and so he's at pretty decent odds. I was like, guys, I think we should back him. And the high fives with friends after a big win, especially when he opens up and wins by 12, any number, and it was like, wow,
TD and Rising Star.
Yeah, wow, we could really have something here. So.
And I think mine would be the Woodbine Mile, because he'd run in the Arlington Million, and he hadn't finished and things like that. And Brian was, he just wasn't sure, and Brian was brave, and he'd worked well, and said, let's point for this race, and it truly was a special experience. My wife Nancy and Price and I, we watched it all together in a Keeneland director's room, where actually my grandfather's sketch is in there and such like that. And so it was a very, very special moment for him to rebound with that.
And a special horse. And you've had a lot of fun marketing him.
We even
came up with an Oscar performance dessert.
We have. Weedle Michael and Honeywood, and it's just some cross-branding. I mean, the name just allows you to do so very much. And so we just try to find the highest level of success. And we're doing the same thing with Sean Clancy and the Saratoga Special, Sean and Joe Clancy, and the top 10 performances. And we're going to actually have something that we're going to announce soon about a little enticement for the top 10 performers. The breeder of the top performer is going to get an Oscar Performance 2020 season.
Ooh.
That we're really very, very excited about. And, again, just cross-branding with Sean and company, and utilizing him and his name and what it all stands for.
Yeah, you couldn't associate yourself with better.
No, we agree very much. Great people.
Yeah, he's a special horse for our family too.
Yes, he is.
We enjoy every time the Ammermans win a race.
No question.
He was just such a cool horse to watch and to follow. And
Bob has done such a fantastic job. I mean, Bob identified Divine Actress, who's the mother, and she is such a gorgeous mare. She's had two $1 million winners in Oscar Performance and Oscar nominated. And Bob has just been allowed them to fly at the highest level, and they're deserving of that.
Yeah, they really are. They're top-notch people.
They
and
are.
Everything good that they get, they deserve.
Well, for example, they had an offer twice the amount that we ended up syndicating for from Japan, and they believed in the horse, they believed in America, and they believed in us. And so that's an example of the kind of people they are.
Talking with Heedley and Price Bell, Mill Ridge, Nakoma, they'll be offering three yearlings at the Saratoga sale. I guess two yearlings now. We're down to two.
Okay. It happens.
Yeah. We did have a Candy Ride, a Lemon Drop Kid, Pioneer of the Nile.
Yeah,
who were the two that are left?
The Candy Ride and the Pioneer of the Nile.
Okay. All right. So we'll go with two yearlings at the sale. We'll talk about them in just a second. But this dynamic, father, son, going down this road together, being part of these moments together, it has to be so special. Heedley, I'll start with you. What's it like?
Well, it is, Mike. It's truly a gift. We do not take it for granted. Both Price and I have been inspired by generations before us, and our grandfather and great-grandfather and my mother. And then to have a chance to work with your own child and such. And obviously the Horse Country Initiative has been something that we've dedicated ourselves to trying to do whatever we can to make the industry the best it can be, as did our forefathers and foremother. And so, to be able to do it with your children, and it's just not Price, it's our other children as well that are well involved with it all. So, six generations, and when you're talking about land and cutting up through six generations, is quite something we really embrace and are proud of.
Price, how about for you? What's it like?
It's the best. I mean, it's really the best. It's great. It's just, wouldn't have it any other way. Just waking up every day and just really working as a team, and just kind of trying to cover all the bases. And I think working on a project like Horse Country was vital, because there was no playbook to do. There was no, we used to do it this way. It's like, all right, how are we building this together and developing a respect and you know, the greatest respect for each other's abilities in building something new, and then the whole rest of the team that we built it out with, and it's still in process, but just that the ability to work on a project that we're so passionate about together gave us such a confidence in working with each other, if that makes sense.
We've mentioned Horse Country a couple of times. Right. Explain what that is for people, if people are listening and they don't sure. know, they're not sure. familiar with it.
Sure. So, you know, for a long time, we breeders in Central Kentucky, and I'm sure across the country and world, have always felt like the public face of the sport was really the racetrack, right? And so at the racetrack was where that's where fans could become fans. And we didn't look at ourselves as being part of that fan development puzzle. And it really... as times change, and as I mean, McKinsey reports come out saying that we're losing fans, and it's, you know, those of us who have experience with a farm and sharing with people have a great strike rate of creating fans, because you're telling the story about the animal and you're really putting the horse first, and that connection with people and the horses so that they can meet the animals. And at the racetrack, it's not necessarily the most conducive place, right? Like I often joke, I have an Olympic athlete friend, and when he's getting ready to get, when he was going into a rowing competition, it was the only time in a year that they ever fought on the crew team, because they'd been tapering and getting so fit, and then they wouldn't train for a week. And now they have all this energy because they're going to max out in the trials. And so it was the only time they ever fought, and these guys were in a boat for, you know, not too long.
Yeah.
And that's how we ask people to fall in love at the in the paddock, right? I mean, we're training the horses to get so fit on that moment, and they're very unrelatable, at least for, I can't relate to it. How about that?
Yeah, right, right.
But yet you go to the farm and you see mares, you know, nuzzling their foals. You feed mares carrots. You see, like, foals, yeah. you know, taking, getting nippy, and you're like, wow, I can relate to this. And now it starts to be a bit different. And then you also set the stage that, you know, the race is this culmination, you know, and it's the brilliance and the athleticism and all these things that we all love about the race. Yet on the farm, we can help be that kind of that on-ramp, if that makes sense, and tell the rest of the story of the horse, so they're not just this moment in time that people see and experience that. And it's been really amazing. And I tell you, in giving tours, we get so much more out of it than actually the guest, I would argue, because we can take it for granted. Like anything, you do what you love, and you keep your head down, and you work every day, and you can, you know, sometimes you have to take a step back and be like, wow, we are so lucky to do this, to have a Saratoga morning, or to have, you know, a morning on the farm. And it takes sharing with others to feel like, wow, you know, you're right, I do have something that's so special.
Yeah, well said.
It's so important for people, fans, and people that are interested in horses to realize that what you guys do is the beginning, and if you don't do a good job, then makes a second person's job right. harder, the third person's hard job. So when a horse is in the paddock, there's all these things that happen to him before that point, and you guys are the beginning of that.
Right.
So, you know, you foal the mares, you teach the babies how to have a halter on, you teach them how to walk, you teach them all of these things before they can do anything, really.
Right.
So it's so important, and people just, I think, a lot of times come to the races and they see the horses in the paddock and they just think like they were zapped there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that process is what makes it so special, and what gives horse people such an affection for the animal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we often say on tours that, you know, horses are prey animals and we're predators. And, you know, there's this interesting juxtaposition of predator and prey, because we respect them of their size and strength, and they us because we're higher on the food chain.
Yeah.
Yet there's then I think that's the, in that relationship of, is kind of the, I don't know, the crux of what makes the relationship so special, this dynamic, and sharing that with people, and seeing that, teaching horses to trust humans and to be, and to do that whole relationship, and getting that across is very is wonderful to share.
Yeah,
and so Horse Country is this nonprofit where it coordinates these farm experiences for farms across Southern Kentucky. There are 36 members, 24 give tours, and you see the whole life cycle. You see the nursery where we, you know, raise. You see stud farms, what makes a stallion. You can go see Justify, see American Pharoah, see, you know, nearly every Derby winner since, other than I'll Have Another, that's still living. And see the veterinary clinic, so you can see horses in surgery and see that level of care. And then, most importantly, see the aftercare. So you can go and visit Secretariat Center, watch retraining, new vocations. There's the Equine Adoption Center where you can make a treat and then go feed it to retired mares, which is great fun and great for, you know, young kids. And it's very, I mean, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, we'll encourage folks to go to visithorsecountry.com to book a tour and to learn more about what we're talking about here this morning.
And I'd also suggest that gosh, Central Kentucky is so very special in the land that we preserved over time, and the number of people that come to the horse park, and you've got the Bourbon Trail and such like that. And by with horse country, we're welcoming the community. We're letting the community know that we want y'all to be a part of this. It is really y'all's as well, as in Central Kentucky. These farms are yours, and it's important to have that connection.
Yeah, it certainly is. We're just about out of time. We have to get to a break in about a minute or so. So we got about 1 minute to touch on the two horses you'll be selling across the street Monday night, Tuesday night. Yeah. Is it Monday or Tuesday? We sell
both Tuesday.
We're Tuesday. Okay.
First in the ring. Okay. Lucky us. First in the ring on Tuesday. So, somebody has to be first. So we have a Candy Ride filly that's a beautiful filly. And Candy Ride is doing so very well. And then we have a Pioneer of the Nile colt that, again, you bring up athletes to the sale. They're heavily scrutinized. You bring up horses that you believe in. So we have two horses that we truly believe in, and we've had a really tremendous strike rate with Mill Ridge horses. And so we welcome offering them next week.
Yeah, the slogan at Mill Ridge, raising and selling racehorses. They've done that for a very long time. Since 2005, they have sold 61 yearlings at the Saratoga sale with 79% winners, 5% grade 1 or grade 2 winners, and 13% graded place runners, 21% stakes place. The numbers they speak for themselves. Stop by and see Healy and Price and tell them you heard them right here on the show, and take a look at those two horses. You can't go wrong. Gentlemen, thank you so much for everything you're doing for the sport with horse country, everything you're doing through Mill Ridge Nakoma, and thanks for all your support of what we do here on the network. Really appreciate it.
We believe in you, and we really do thank you all for sharing so much.
All right. I'll see you guys around the track the next day or two.
Look forward to
it.
We'll
find a nice trash can to cozy up next to and have a little lunch.
talk about the Steelers.
Exactly. Twist my arm. All right, we're going to go ahead and get to another break. We will remind you, though, before we do that Healy and Price, like all of our guests who appear on the show, will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. We're back with the Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, right after this break on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
This is Commentator Week on HRRN. Presented by the New York State Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund.
Attention, Kentucky breds. Make plans to race at the upcoming Kentucky Downs meet starting August 31st, where Kentucky breds compete for huge purses. Kentucky breds will run for $130,000 in maiden events, with allowance races offering up to $145,000, the highest in the nation. Plus a Breeders' Cup win and you're in the turf sprint on September 7th. With additional purse money available for KTDF-eligible horses, Kentucky Downs is the place to race a Kentucky bred this summer. Visit KentuckyBred.org for details.
This is Tom Durkin for NYBreds.com, inviting you to get with the New York program because it offers owners a better chance to make money. Because you have the option of running in more than 800 races a year where your horse faces only other state breds. And there's more than $40 million in purse money for those restricted races. So come to Saratoga in early August and buy your New York bred yearling at one of the Fassig Tifton sales. And next year, we hope to see you win at the Spa.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Here's Track Smith cut loose in the center of the course with a clear shot, and Track Smith is under a very confident hand ride right up to War Treaty and right by him at the 16th pole. War Treaty fighting hard, but it's over. Track Smith is best. Track Smith by a length.
Track Smith, the 3-year-old son of Darley stallion Street Sense, earned his first black type win in the Frisk Me Now Stakes at Monmouth on Saturday, getting an 86 buyer speed figure, and that impressive victory makes Track Smith your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, the first horse to win both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Kentucky Derby. Only Tappet, Hard Spun, and Into Mischief can beat Street Sense's 10 black type 3-year-olds so far this year. Learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile. Join me and Jude Feld every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern for Express Bet Radio on HRN. We'll have live racing from summer tracks like Belmont, Saratoga, Del Mar, Santa Anita, Churchill Downs, and more, and interviews with the top horsemen and women from around the country. You can tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live worldwide at horseracingradio.net. That's Express Bet Radio on HRN.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
But Gary Stevens has something up with Covington. They're holding on grimly, trying to get it out for another furlong. St. Liam's in an all-out drive, but he's still a length and a half behind in second. By the back swing for the fences, down to the finish. Covington, St. Liam surges. It's a photo. A photo that goes to Covington.
Turning for home in the Whitney with a three-length lead. On the far outside, Student Council trying to reel him in, but time is running out. There's less than a furlong to go, and it's Commentator well clear. Followed by Student Council, and here's Commentator to win the Whitney again. And boy, he did it with some front-running style today.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, trackside at historic Saratoga. Those race calls courtesy of the great Tom Durkin, commentator, winning the Whitney in 2005 and again in 2008. The New York-bred son of Distorted Humor, trained by Nick Zito, owned by Tracy Farmer, went on to win 14 of 24 lifetime starts, more than $2 million in earnings. He also scored in the Mass Cap. Remember that race at Suffolk? Yeah, he scored impressively there as well. Commentator, one of the great New York breds of all time. And this week, we debuted Horse Weeks on HRRN. And who better to debut with than the two-time Whitney winner, Commentator? All of you have been enjoying different commentator interviews and a look back at many of his big performances throughout the week. And we're going to continue to do this later in the year. We'll have Silver Charm Week. We'll have Game on Dude Week. There will be several Mucho Macho Man Week going into the Breeders' Cup, Beholder Week. All of those scheduled for later this season.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The fans have really enjoyed it, and it's been nice going down memory lane.
Our thanks to the New York State Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund for their sponsorship of Commentator Week all week long here on HRRN. When you think back on Commentator for a minute, we're going to hear from John Velasquez in just a second, who rode Commentator to win his second Whitney. It was Gary Stevens who won the first Whitney with him in 2005. But when you think back on him and how special he was, what moment stands out to you?
Well, I just remember him coming down the stretch in Tracy Farmer's black and white colors.
Yeah.
You say Commentator, and that's exactly what flashes in my mind. It's not necessarily a particular race, but it's like every race. He was a cool horse.
Yeah, he is now residing at Old Friends up here in New York. As a matter of fact, I ran into Michael Blowen from Old Friends yesterday, and he was telling me that when he won the Mass Cap, Suffolk Downs has jockey statues outside, and they're painted in the colors of the Mass Cap winners. So he wanted to see if Suffolk would send him that 2008 statue of when Commentator won, and they did. He had arrived at the farm here in New York, about 15 minutes from Saratoga yesterday, and Commentator is there, and now his statue is there with him, too. Pretty cool.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, pretty neat. Commentator is our Industry Star of the Week for this Saturday morning, this Industry Star segment presented every week by our friend Stuart Morris. Don't forget that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He'd like to thank his owners, clients, and team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment across the street at the Saratoga sale and at all the major sales across the country. John Velasquez was a board commentator for that second Whitney win in 2008, and earlier he took the time to visit with our Anthony Stabile and look back on that performance.
We're here with the winningest rider in the history of Saratoga, John Velasquez, who's going for his record-tying fifth Whitney this Saturday. Before we talk to him about Vino Rosso,
his mount this year. Let's talk to him about one of his more accomplished runners of all time, commentator. Johnny, you rode commentator for the last 2 years of his career. You ever have any other horse that you won on by at least double-digit lengths three times in your career?
I don't know. I don't remember, but I know he did, and that's for sure. He was a very nice horseman, and what a game horse. I mean, he did it the whole time, you know, fighting on the lead, which is very tough to do, and with different horses, different racetracks. So, you know, to have him around and to be around it, it was a pleasure to be on him, you know.
He won the Whitney in 05, and then again 3 years later in 08 when you were on him. What do you remember about that race?
The same thing, man. I'm sorry, Nick. I remember clearly, like it was yesterday. Nick says to me, "It's like you make sure you pop him out of there and let him come and get him, though, you know." And that's the way he ran, you know, most of the time. And he showed up every time. What an exciting horse he was, man. I'll tell you that, yeah.
Yeah, he was special. Commentator. This wrapping up Commentator Week here on HRRN. Again, stay tuned for more Horse Weeks coming up later in the year. Trying to put together week for Travers. What do you think that week might be, knowing the Baron the way you do?
Well, Holy Bull would be part of it. But,
you think? Yeah. Holy Bull.
Yeah, Holy Bull.
1-9 to be Holy Bull week that week going into the Travers.
The greatest Travers performance of all time, though, was Arrogate.
No, but the greatest racehorse of all time was Holy Bull.
Well, that's arguable.
Very much so. Very much so. All right, we're not going to do that now. We have to get to a quick 10-second station ID. We'll come back with hour number two. Going to be a busy second half of the program. We will visit with owner Michael Dubb to talk about his Whitney contender, Monongahela, and we'll talk about Preservationist with owner Don Little Jr. Stay with us. We're back with more right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Jovia fights on. Tacitus is there. And then tacks between horses. Master Fencer on the far outside. They're coming to the finish. And Sir Winston has won the Belmont Stakes.
There's an eighth of a mile to go. Bolo keeps on going. River Boyne on the inside. Catapult far outside. Bowie Zero. But Bolo has something left for the final 16th, and it's going to be Bolo coast to coast in the Shoemaker Mile.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Mucho Gusto trying so hard to go by. Maximum Security just in front. Mucho Gusto valiant, but Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
Stride to stride, a long to run. One bad boy. One bad boy. Never looked better and has got the Queen's Plate well and truly won.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Jude Feld with you on the Horse Racing Radio Network, positioned just a stone's throw from the historic main track in Saratoga Springs, New York, getting set for the Grade 1 Whitney and the Grade 1 Test. Our coverage comes up this afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern, right here on Sirius 219, XM 201, and you can stream us worldwide, as always, on our website at horseracingradio.net. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, our interviews with Max Hodge and Jesse Ullery, or Heedley Bell and Price Bell from Millridge, simply head over to our website and check out the podcast of this show. It will be posted on our site shortly after we finish up at 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Our poll question of the day, you can weigh in at HRRN on Twitter or Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Is this year's Breeders' Cup Classic winner competing in today's Whitney Stakes? And if you click yes, please specify which horse you think that might be. Well, currently, most of our listeners are thinking that the Classic winner is not in this year's field. 67% of the votes coming in saying no, the Classic winner is not competing in this afternoon's Whitney. That's not what owner Michael Dubb is hoping for. He is hoping that Monongahela, the Pennsylvania bred, can win the Whitney today, punch his ticket to the Breeders' Cup with this win in your in race. And Monongahela, ultra-talented, comes in off of that big win in the Grade 3 Philip Island Stakes at Monmouth back on June 22nd. And Michael, nice enough to stop by and spend some time with us here this morning. First of all, Michael, welcome to the program. happy Whitney Day.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, congratulations on that huge win in the Island last time out, too. What a performance, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is a hard-hitting Mid-Atlantic horse who has been in Jason's barn now for a couple races and really improving every step of the way. So the horse happens to be a PA bred. We were cross-entered in a $100,000 race at Parks today, but we're New York people. She's going the right way. Whitney only comes around once a year, and we're hoping we can get a slice.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the decision to come here because you did have other options. And, you know, when you look at the numbers and you see the way that Monongahela stacks up against some of the other heavy hitters in here, his numbers aren't that far below them. As a matter of fact, some are right there with them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But we all know in this game it's not numbers. Class is important.
Yep.
And this is a step up in class, so we have to be realistic about it. And we're here at Saratoga. We actually had planned to race 2 weeks ago on Haskell Day in the Monmouth Cup since we had a win over the track. With the heat wave and the way that day played out, we decided to err on the side of caution, not race, and switch gears and point for this race.
You're a really good handicapper, obviously. I mean, you're involved in the game at every level. So you know what you're looking at when you look at the PPs. You're not just some guy that sits in the turf club every day and you know, eats lunch. So you have to have assessed this field and have some idea of what kind of race your horse is going to run and where he's going to be and that type of thing.
Well, the good news here and the good news for Saratoga on these mile and an eighth races, I think it's you tend generally, and obviously every day is different, to want to be forwardly placed or on the lead in these races. And, you know, looking through the PPs, there's three or four horses that fit that bill, forwardly placed or on the lead. So I think that's where Monongahela will be. And, you know, it's two turns. He loves two turns. The form on some of the other horses is you could make an argument that it's questionable. So we're here, and we want to take our shot. And, you know, I'm not making any bold predictions, just that I think the horse will run to the best of its capability.
I'll give you another reason to have some hope here this afternoon, Michael. As you know, this racetrack, Saratoga, known as the graveyard of champions, the graveyard of favorites. So, you know, Monongahela not going to be a favorite in here. This is a race that we saw Onion upset Secretariat in 1973. Who knows? You're in the race, right? You have to take your shot.
Well, we do, and clearly this is an improving horse. Now, if we want to go by numbers and just numbers and not factor in things like we have to, like class and competition, the numbers are right there. But, again, there's a lot more than numbers. I know horses don't count.
And they can't read the tote board either, by the way, when they come onto the track. So,
nor do they know what you paid for them.
So Monongahela is not going to care about any of that. We'll see if he can step up and run a big race, maybe pull off a bit of an upset later this afternoon in the Whitney. Michael, let's talk about you for a minute. Where did the love of horse racing start for you?
I'm in my early 60s now. The first time I came to Saratoga was in a van, and I slept in a park and slept in shopping centers. I had a friend who invented a handicapping device about 50 years ago called the Kelco Calculator, and they were the people who took me here, and all I could do was afford to bet show. I really had to bet as safe as I could, I was drawn in and got, you know, heavily into the game after we built the daycare center at Belmont Park. I started to be around owners and trainers and thought it would be fun to own a horse or two. And unfortunately, or fortunately for me, it changed my life. So,
from the Kelco calculator,
yeah,
to Horse Owner Deluxe, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was the first horse that you ever owned?
It was a horse named Tasty Chardonnay. The trainer was Pat Reynolds. It was 2002 at one opening day here at Saratoga. Jerry Bailey came from out of the clouds to win by 17 lengths. And for a long time, that picture has been hanging in Ciro's.
That's great.
It's easy to get hooked when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, I obviously owning horses can cost you money in the long run, but I wouldn't trade the money for the people and the experiences I've had. No way, no how. It's... a great game. And, you know, it's sad that we take a lot of criticism because nobody really understands the heart, soul, the spirit, the goodness and the kindness of most people in this game. And it's just a shame we can't communicate that to the public better.
Yeah, and you do such a good job with the philanthropy part of it, and you're looking for ways to give back all the time. And I think, you know, we probably should advertise that a little bit more, that people in racing are very giving and think about one another and help one another out, and not just in big ways, but in little ways sometimes that nobody knows about except the person that's helping out the other person.
You know, some of the stuff I do is obvious. You build a building, a daycare center. The building is there. The kids come and go, and it's amazing to watch. But it's, as you said, Jude, the kindness of people day in and day out on the track, what doesn't get noticed, what isn't standing in the way of a structure that sometimes can memorialize the kindness. But the people on the backside and people who don't necessarily have a lot to give are still giving. And the backside community are special people. The work, you know, it's amazing. You know, I'll go on and read social media, the criticism of the people on the backside. This guy's no good. This guy's doing this. This guy's doing. These guys are getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 365 days a year. The workers are getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 365 days a year. Their work never, ever ends. So we just keep going, but hopefully one day we can communicate to the public what a special industry this is.
Yeah, visiting with owner Michael Dubb here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. Michael, one thing we hear in the game quite often is that we need new owners in the game. We need to find a way to attract new owners to the sport. You were obviously attracted. You just told the story. If you talk to a potential new owner, what do you want them to know about the sport?
Well, I think the best thing for new owners to do is to do their homework, start small. A lot of people dip their toe in the water with partnerships, and sometimes after the partnership they go out on their own. Sometimes they find the right partnership, and they're as happy as can be. You know, understand that this is a game that whatever can go wrong will go wrong. It's just nature of it. These are moving, breathing creatures. So you've got to come to it with patience. You've got to come to it with a positive spirit. We get bad news every single day, and I'm going to give you an example. I have World of Trouble today in the Troy. Woke up this morning, and the horse stepped on a rock I have to scratch, 3-5. Looking forward to the race all summer. But, you know, you just lift your head up, and you say, thank God it's nothing serious, and you go on. So you have to really come at it with, it's not just about winning a race, it's about the people you're going to meet, it's about the experiences you're going to have, it's the places it's going to take you. You will have a picture to hang on the wall that you can look at, you know, for some inspiration every now and then. But you know, just keep your head up. Whatever the game throws at you, take it and start small. I mean, but most people don't start big. They start small. And, you know, really respect the money aspect of the game. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And just try and find as fair a deal as you can.
Yeah, it's important. I think, you know, people often say, oh, well, you know, for that guy, it's monopoly money. It doesn't mean anything. And that's not true because it's a very expensive game, and you have to pay attention. You have to always pay attention to the business aspect of it because it costs a lot of money to have horses.
You know, Jude, you really make a great point. For some people, you're competing in a game where for some people it is almost like monopoly. For the majority of people, it isn't like monopoly money. So, you know, sometimes you have to look for opportunity. I'm running a horse today, Colton, Mississippi. The horse started, I claimed it for $40,000. The horse started out as a $400,000 horse. So, you know that there was inherently something somebody felt to spend a lot of money on that horse. What has caused that horse to be in a 40 claimer? Is it a physical condition? In other words, a knee, an ankle, a tendon? Or is it a mental condition? Is it the way the horse is trained? And so I'd rather often be the second guy to find out. You know, there's a saying, if a guy goes and builds a pizzeria, puts a whole lot of money into it, you want to be the second owner of the pizzeria.
Yeah.
So the kitchen's there, everything is in place. So, you know, you have to respect, you know, when you see money being thrown around and you feel it's just too much, you sometimes have to learn how to fold your shoulders and take a wait and see attitude and see what happens. So I play the game. I buy yearlings, I buy 2-year-olds in training, I claim horses, we do private purchases, European imports with Chad Brown. I think one bit of advice I would give people is a little bit of diversity. That keeps you going. You know, the guy who just buys yearlings waits a lot, and if he had a great crop, he did. If he didn't, he doesn't have much action. So that's really...
And it seems to go like that too, huh? Like if you're just buying yearlings, like you may have a bunch of nice ones one year, the next year they might be all terrible. So you just don't know. So if you have a little bit here and there, it's a lot more
fun.
Nobody
knows for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, diversification, yeah. You know, that way, you know, we're in all parts of it. So when one thing is cooking, you know, hopefully another thing, if it isn't, you know, we're not just sitting on the sidelines, have some action.
When you think back, Michael, on these nearly 20 years of being involved with owning racehorses now, what's the most memorable or maybe the proudest moment for you as an owner?
Oh, you know, there have been so many of them, but truthfully, the proudest moment is every June graduation day at the Belmont Daycare Center, because that really, I mean... I've been involved in Breeders' Cup races, Kentucky Oaks, all of that. But knowing that I had something to do with making a difference in the life of those children at the daycare center, they go in as 6-week-old infants, and they graduate in cap and gown, full of piss and vinegar and ready to take on the world. We teach them English. We teach them computer skills. We teach them how to garden, play chess. And they're ready to take on the world, and they have a great, great foundation. So that's the highlight of my year every year, as I look forward to June graduation at the Belmont Daycare Center. But aside from that, I guess winning the Kentucky Oaks with Mona Moy Girl last year, winning Breeders' Cup races with Wavell Avenue. There have been so many. The spinaway here was Tom Durkin's last call.
Yeah.
So I shared that moment with Tom Durkin. And winning that race in 2002 with Tasty Chardonnay, it was a 50-claimer, yeah. Arguably one of the greatest moments. That's what is important for people to understand. The greatest moment for somebody isn't necessarily a grade one race. It's what's around you, the people you share it with, the circumstances. And winning that race in 2002, opening day, is still one of the greatest days of my life.
We've got to get to a commercial break here in just about a minute or so, but give us an update on Mona Moy Girl. What's going on there?
I was with Brad Cox yesterday. She is training lights out. We're all anxious to get her back. The goal would be to make the Breeders' Cup distaff, but I think after the season she gave us, you know, she had a bout of colic. We gave her plenty of time. We're looking forward to seeing the old Mona Moy Girl and what path we take with her, since she's kind of coming later in the year, will be interesting. Maybe even the big race at Gulfstream against the boys.
Ooh. Wouldn't that be something?
Everybody wants to see her back except for Jeff Bloom.
Well, Jeff Bloom's a good guy, and it's his turn, you know.
For now.
Yeah.
Michael, listen, we really appreciate the visit. A lot of fun. Keep up the wonderful work that you're doing down there at Belmont Park, and all the best moving forward here with not only Monongahela, but all the horses. Keep it rolling, my friend, and we'll look forward to catching up the road.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, Michael Dubb here on HRRN. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Still to come, Don Little Jr. from Centennial Farm. We'll hear from him coming up right around 9:45 Eastern Time. But when we come back, we're going to hear from Hall of Famers Mike Smith and John Velasquez talking about their contenders in this year's Whitney. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonySteaksandSeafood.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Mastery retired undefeated, winning his four starts by a combined 20 lengths. A six-figure September sale purchase, he won impressively in his two-year-old debut at Santa Anita. From there, he captured the Grade 3 Bob Hope Stakes and completed his juvenile campaign with a dominant performance in the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity. At three, the top-rated son of Candy Ride sizzled in the San Felipe. Now his much-anticipated first crop has arrived. Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Fabian Pratt asking a lot from Bellafina now. She is starting to pick up her stride, but she's got work to do. And here comes Leora. Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Ladyapolis third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two and Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks. Leora was second, Lady Apple was third, then came Champagne Anyone, Bellafina finishes fifth. The final time was 1 minute 50.17 seconds.
That's Larry Colmus with the call of this year's Kentucky Oaks at Churchill Downs. That was on May 3rd. Serengeti Empress scoring a front-running victory, defeating the favorite Bellafina and everybody else that afternoon. Later today, they'll get a rematch in the Grade 1 Test Stakes, 7 furlongs on the main track. Both fillies turning back in distance. We'll face some others who look to be pretty tough. That is a contentious renewal of the Test Stakes later today. And that leads us into the return of our Philly Focus segment, presented by Paramount Sales.
This is the Philly Focus.
Forever together as one, a thriller.
Take charge, Brandy, in a stunner.
Call back, held on to it.
Presented by Paramount Sales, the new force in thoroughbred sales.
And we'll give you our selection for the Test Stakes here momentarily. But before we do, I had a chance to stop by the Paramount Barn across the street at the Saratoga sale yesterday and visit with Pat Costello and talk to him about the horses he's selling and about the success that they have had with fillies over the years. Here's Pat.
Pat, we're sitting here outside your barn at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, and when you look at the names above the stalls, you see names like Rubiano and Foolish Pleasure and DeTerra and even Callback, who was a sensational filly, Union Rags, another horse that came through your consignment. You've had so much success over the years. I know that this segment is focused on fillies, but let's just start with the success that Paramount has had over the years. It's just been spectacular.
Yes, Saratoga has been great to us, and our graduates out of here have been, as you said, you know, DeTerra, Union Rags, and we have some very nice individuals here this year as well, More Than Ready, Warfront, Nyquist, Candy Ride, you know, so we've got all the good sire names, and Into Mischief, of course, he's just phenomenal sire, so we're very excited about the group this year too.
What is it about this sale that just seems to click for Paramount?
We're trying to earmark or pick our special horses to come here, and they obviously have to be very athletic and have to be the real deal to come here, you know. And when we do that, I think we get rewarded, you know.
When you put your eyes on a youngster, how long does it take you to know if they have what it takes to be a really special horse?
Well, I think they have to be a little earlier maturing than a lot of the horses when you earlier on in the year. And if you can see that in them and feel that they're going to be ready for this sale, I think that's a big part of it. And I also think, you see them once you kind of make up, you know, your mind whether they suit or not, you know.
We always hear that term that a horse checks all the boxes. What are all those boxes for Pat Costello? What are some of the things you always look for?
Well, obviously they have to be correct and they have to be fast looking, you know, they're athletic. And I like a good eye, a good head on a horse, and combination of all of it, you know.
Let's talk about the ladies. Callback, Take Charge Brandy, a couple of big names that have come through your consignments over the years. What do you remember about them when they were young?
They all had that look about them that you know, quality and looked like they, you know, their minds were great, and that sticks out more than anything, you know, with them.
Last year you told me that presence was a big thing, not necessarily the athleticism, I mean that's big too, but the presence when they walk out, you can just kind of tell right away. What's that look like? How do you describe that to people?
Like, you take this filly we're looking at here now, she's only been out her first time here, and she's calm, and she's has a great mind, you know. She's not freaking out about the whole new environment thing, and that shows that she's a bit of class, you know.
Why do you think you've had so much luck with the ladies over the years? I mean the horses now.
I don't know. Well, you see, Nyquist, we sold Nyquist as well. It won the Derby. DeTerra is a colt, you know. So it's been a mixture, I think. But the fillies, yeah, we've sold some great ones. Yeah.
Is there a philosophy that you've always subscribed to at Paramount that you said, okay, this is how we do business. We're different than some, but we're the same as some. This is how we do it. What's that Paramount philosophy?
Well, I think we'd like to have our owners enjoy their experience with us and be frank with them on their valuations of horses. So that when the time comes to put reserves, etc., on horses, nobody is surprised or nobody's going to be shocked, and they go away with a good feeling, you know.
You're going to be busy. You'll go from here, you'll go down to Keeneland, and you'll be busy at the Keeneland September sale. Of course, you'll have the New York bred consignment here next week as well. So you'll be very busy up here for a while before you do get to Keeneland. And then in November, it kind of switches. You go from the yearlings to the older horses and the mares and foals and the horses of racing age. For people that are thinking about where they might want to or who they might want to send their top mares to consign them, what do you want them to know about what you do with the older horses?
Well, I think that especially fillies off the track, we specialize, and Fasig Tipton do a great job recruiting them fillies, and I think where our myself and my staff, Leslie Campion and Gabriel Dignan, have the knowledge and love for racing, and I think that's a big addition, and that helps at the sales, on the sales ground too.
Keep up the great work, Pat.
All right, thanks a million.
All right, Pat Costello, our Philly Focus segment presented by Paramount Sales. We will do that before many of the big Philly races throughout the remainder of the year, so make sure you stay tuned for more. But stop by the Pat Costello Paramount Sales consignment and tell them you heard that Philly Focus segment right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jude, who wins that test stakes later this afternoon? Contentious race.
Yeah, it really is. It's a tough race, and to me it looks like Chad Brown has the right filly in Royal Charlotte. She's undefeated. She won her last race by four, the victory ride at Belmont Park. It just keeps improving. The race kind of sets up for her, too. There's some speed to set it up. Seven furlongs should be a great distance for her. She just won going 6.5 by 4. I think she's the filly to beat.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. A perfect 4 for 4. All four starts coming at four different tracks. This would be her fifth different track in those five lifetime starts, and nothing seems to stop her. And you're right about the pace scenario. I think there's a lot of speed in there. And with her drawn to the outside, I think that benefits her. She can sit off of it, make that one run at the end. I think she remains undefeated later today.
Yeah, I think she's got a big chance. The favorite, Bellafina, is a nice filly, but she doesn't travel well. Her races out of town aren't that good. She's a kind of a California girl.
Yeah, Serengeti Empress could be interesting cutting back. She does have that early lick to her, but she has the rail. She's going to have to go from the inside post position, and she might face some heat on the front end.
Yeah, she's a very tough filly. She can run, and she can sprint as well as route, so I think you have to respect her.
All right, we're going to focus on the Whitney in just a moment with Hall of Famers Mike Smith and John Velasquez, but want to remind you that when you want information on a stallion and his progeny, from current and top runners to entries and recent results to sales results from his offspring, important sire statistics, and more, there is only one place you need to go, and that's Blood Horse Stallion Register, the thoroughbred industry's source with more than 3 million page views a year. Go to stallionregister.com to learn more. All right, well, Hall of Famers Mike Smith and John Velasquez took the time to visit with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, earlier this week, and we went ahead and pulled a couple of sound bites for you. Mike Smith, of course, going to be aboard McKenzie, the favorite in today's Whitney, and Johnny aboard Vino Rosso. And here's what Mike had to say about McKenzie maturing and looking ahead to the Whitney here today.
He's just a special horse. He really is. And it's his time to shine. I don't think we've seen how good this horse really is and can be. I still really believe we haven't seen the best of him, but, you know, he got hurt early on. You know, he was probably the Derby favorite before Justify came along, and he got hurt early on. And of course, I was just blessed that Justify did come along. But now that he's retired, I mean, McKenzie has stepped into his shoes, and I don't believe that we've seen the best of this horse yet. I think there's more to him, and he's a big kind of awkward horse growing into himself, and man, it's all coming together now, especially in his four-year-old year, and he's starting to really do things right. Of course, in the morning he's training just incredible, and he's starting to really do things that are incredible in the afternoon, and given that opportunity, it's a tough race, and it's a good race, man, but they're supposed to be when you're running $4 million at Saratoga, and I'm excited about it.
Well, he should be excited about it. He has a 7-5 favorite in McKenzie. He also went on to talk about his likely position in the race if everything goes according to plan.
I've learned with him, you know, as well as him growing up, I've learned him as well. And he likes to be in a comfortable, happy place. And sometimes that's up close. If he gets away running on his own, it could be up close, could even be on the lead. But he's also, as you've seen, you know, he's settled back. Of course, you know, the pace is a lot quicker when he has settled back. But when he does, he comes with a powerful run. So that's a great thing about him. He's not a need the lead type or has to have pace to run into to run his race. As long as he's comfortable, he's going to fire. And that's if they go fast or they go slow or if he wants to lay up very close or if he, you know, chooses to sit back a length or two. But I always help him out of there. He's a big horse, so I'm going to help him on out of there, and we'll see where that puts him.
Jude, what do you make of those comments you just heard from Mike Smith?
Well, I think, you know, he's learning about the horse, and the horse is learning his job. I think he's a horse that's still not 100% sure of what he is supposed to do in a race, and you can see that in his running style. He has fits and starts, and he's not super confident of his job, but I think as he ages and gets more experience, that's starting to click for him, and I think moving forward, he's going to be, you know, a major force, but he still is a little green.
Are you sold that McKenzie should have won that Met Mile? Was it not for his trouble last time out?
I was almost absolutely sure that Mattioli was going to win no matter what. So I'm probably the wrong guy to ask.
I've heard it both ways. There are people who are adamant about the fact that, yeah, he was the best horse in that race. There's other people that say, you know what, that's a phony argument. He was never going to win the race regardless.
Well, he doesn't have that killer instinct yet, and I think that's what he's got to learn. He's got to learn that he has to pass every horse, and you know, he just isn't there yet, but patience is a virtue, as we will see with preservationists.
Exactly. Well, we're going to visit with Don Little Jr. from Centennial Farms, the owners of Preservationist, coming up here in just a few minutes. Vino Rosso is a horse that a lot of people for much of the past several months have thought this is a horse that can be the horse, the major player in this older horse division, and he's another one that just hasn't quite taken that next step. Well, he did last time out when he won the Grade 1 Gold Cup at Santa Anita, and much like McKenzie, he's a horse that's starting to mature a little bit, and John Velasquez will be aboard again today, and the Hall of Famer talked about that maturity and whether or not he sees Vino Rosso as a legitimate Breeders' Cup contender.
I definitely think he's definitely more mature this year, though, you know, and I think he's more serious and more focused on the things that he needs to do. Obviously, show, you know, the first time he came back in New York, he won, and then we run in the Cairo. I think it was a little too short for him. Went out to California. He show up a big race, you know. I think if he can show up again here on Saturday, I think we'd be in really good shape. If he runs the same race that he ran in California, he's definitely a contender for the Breeders' Cup. And I hope that, you know, those races that he ran here last year, it was because he was just not 100% the way he came back this year. So hopefully we can show it. But, I mean, the talent has always been there, though. You know, we always thought that he was a very talented horse. He couldn't put it together. Seems like this year he's more seriously putting together the races, more consistent. So hopefully this year is his year.
Yeah, and he needs to be more consistent, Jude. We've seen this before from Vino Rosso. Last year he wins the Wood Memorial, comes back, the next race finishes ninth in the Kentucky Derby. Okay, you forgive him for that one. Comes back and wins the Stymie at Aqueduct in March. Then the next time out, he flops at 5-2 in the Grade 1 Carter. He finishes fourth, which I guess flops might be a little tough there. But, you know, he's beaten 2.25 lengths. He doesn't deliver. Comes back and wins the Gold Cup. What's he do here today?
Well, he could win. I mean, you know, he's learning.
It's an important race for him, though, right? He needs to show that he belongs at this level, right?
He's a really good horse. He belongs at this level. He's one of the best horses in training. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, a lot of people think he's going to win, and he may. But he's another one that has always been a little unsure of himself. And I think this year, I think Johnny's right. He's been better this year. He's been more focused. He's learned. Every time you give a horse a break, they come back better. People need to realize that. You know, when you have a two-year-old and they run a couple races and they don't know what they're doing, if you give them like 30 days, 45 days, you bring them back, they're gangbusters to run. They want to run. They feel it, you know, and they usually win. And it's really important that horses need time to develop, and this horse is developing still.
The ground here in Saratoga, a little damp from a brief rain shower we had just a few minutes ago. It wasn't much, just kind of a light rain. There is some cloud cover overhead, but the forecast today is pretty good. They're calling for temperatures in the low 80s and plenty of sunshine as we make our way closer to post time for the races. They kick off 1 o'clock Eastern. Of course, the Whitney, 5:46 Eastern time. We'll have that exclusive radio coverage for you from 5 to 6. You'll hear both the Whitney and the test. It is all part of our Road to the Breeders' Cup series presented by Breeders' Cup and our Saturdays at Saratoga series presented by visitbarbados.org. You can listen on Sirius 219 XM 201 and stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. And my beautiful wife, Michelle, who is producing the show on site with us here this morning, showing us a press release just sent out by Naira here moments ago. The richest thoroughbred in training, Thunder Snow, has been scratched from the Whitney this afternoon. So Thunder Snow will not go to the post in the Whitney. He was 3-1 on the morning line. That will be one less horse for the others to have hand with, including Preservationist, who is owned by Centennial Farms. When we come back, we're going to visit with owner Don Little Jr. from Centennial. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup.
Which New York bred is a two-time winner of the historic Whitney?
It's a photo that goes to the commentator!
Commentator! To win the Whitney again! Any more questions?
Commentator Week on HRRN, presented by the New York State Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Experience the thrill of pulse-pounding thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Step outside to a front-row seat for world-class racing or enjoy the view from towering windows in a gorgeous space. What better way to spend an afternoon than with friends, a craft beer, local cuisine, and a winning ticket? Play it safe on a favorite or take a chance on a long shot. Odds are you're going to have a fabulous time. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time 1:10 p.m.
Adina Springs Stallion, Ghost Zapper, the consistently brilliant sire of 11% black type winners, including Breeders' Cup champion and Eclipse champion female sprinter, Judy the Beauty.
Judy the Beauty! Judy the Beauty! One and a head and I thrill it!
Santa Anita Handicap winner, Shaman Ghost.
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
And Whitney Handicap hero, Moreno.
100 yards from home, and it's Moreno! Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score!
Ghost Zapper's 2019 stars include millionaire champion Holy Helena and unbeaten Guarana, the number one 3-year-old filly in North America.
Another impressive outing here! Guarana 2 for 2, and she's an Acorn winner!
Guarana has won the Coaching Club American Oaks over Point of Honor.
Consistently brilliant Ghost Zapper, standing at Adina Springs. Visit adinastallions.com.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Colonial Affair rallies. There goes Colonial Affair, four wide as they move toward the top of the stretch. And he is coming with giant strides. Thunder Rumble has a lot to do. And Devil Is Due is kicking in. West by West is coming up the inside. He's in with a chance. But Colonial Affair is the leader as they come to the eighth hole. Devil Is Due, full out. Thunder Rumble will not get there today. West by West is third, 16th hole, Colonial Affair, fully extended to hold up the onrushing Devil Is Due. Colonial Affair, Devil Is Due, fair game, bound up, and it's Colonial Affair won it by a desperate nose over the hard late charge of Devil Is Due. West by West was third.
Well, Tom Durkin bringing them home in the 1994 renewal of the Whitney. 25 years ago, it was Colonial Affair holding off the great Devil His Due. You heard a Travers winner in there with Thunder Rumble, and Colonial Affair better than all of them that day. Of course, he toted the Colonial or the Centennial Farms colors to victory, and they're back in action later today with Preservationists looking for another Whitney victory. Jimmy Jerkins, the trainer of Preservationist, and the owner, Don Little Jr., with us now here on HRRN. Don, a little trip down memory lane for you there, my friend.
Well, Mike, and of course, Devil Is Due, who was trained by Alan, is right there on the tail. And
yeah,
here we do. We have Jimmy as trainer now, and looking forward to hopefully an enjoyable 25th anniversary.
What do you remember about that day in 94?
Well, it was sort of put on my shoulders that day because my father and mother weren't able to attend the race. They were actually over in Switzerland with a business commitment that my father had. So I was there representing him and Centennial for the day, and sort of a nice way to really be put in the front of it and represent the partners in a successful way. And hopefully we can do it today.
I almost didn't put you on the air.
You show up to my show wearing a Patriots hat? Are you serious?
I actually looked at my hat rack today, and I said, well, I know who I'm going to be talking with, and I'm surprised you don't have a Pittsburgh Steelers hat.
I actually have one back at the house. I went with the company thing today with the HRN cap, but it's black and gold.
Well, you know,
I'm still representing.
You learn that stuff from the NASCAR drivers called the hat dance, and you kind of switch it around as you go.
Yeah. Well, listen, preservation is so impressive. A huge effort last time out in the Suburban. You were talking to me before we came on the air. You said if you can run back to that race, we're obviously in great shape. You're right. Hoping for another repeat performance.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's put two back-to-back races and consistently that were visually impressive. His allowance race before the Suburban, we thought maybe he might be a little bit short, but like Jude was saying with McKinsey and even Vino Rosso, these horses get better with maturity, and he's the perfect example of it, and almost the extreme example. And, there was nothing really wrong with him. He had some little hiccups, and it's like any major athlete and any professional athlete, and especially Olympic athletes who compete every 4 years at the highest level. You just see these little things, and they're growing as you are training, and muscles get sore and little things come along, and we knew deep down inside, and when Dr. Carr and Paula Parsons picked him out at the yearling sales with his pedigree, that he was worth taking the time for. And it's paid off, and we're seeing it in true force, especially in the last two races.
Yeah, when you do things the right way, it usually pays off. And I mean, this horse, when you look at his form, you go, well, he's 6 years old, he's run eight times, and, dating back to 2016, and then, had to wait over a year to run him back, or close to a year. And, I mean, just the patience is outstanding. It's something you don't see every day. And his last race was like an out-of-body experience. I mean, that was a tremendous performance, speed figure-wise, pace figure-wise, visually. I mean, it was tremendously pleasing to watch.
Yeah, visually. As I said, to see it in person. I was here with, watching, not here actually, at Belmont when I saw Frosted with him at Mile, and I thought that was the most impressive race I've ever seen in person. And I told Jimmy the day after at the barn, I said, visually to see that race in person was one of the best races I've seen.
Yeah.
And I think even in the allowance races too. And
How's he been since?
He's been fine. You always have that risk, and people look at these good horses now. The time between races is getting longer and longer, but this is a lot like a lot of good horses. He's a big, strong, can take the training. Jimmy trains hard for big races, and it's proven successful over the years. He did it with FNX. He did it with Sermon's Ghost. Even though Wicked Strong didn't win a race in, a grade one race as a four-year-old, he was consistently there. And, this horse, you look at the past performance and you look at McKinsey and say, oh, my God, look at this race record and look at the speed figures. And, we hit a 108, which is exceptional. But you can say you're lightly raced at six is I think, an advantage. I think that's one thing we have in our column right now.
Yeah, and according to the Briss past performances, which Jude and I use religiously, that last race earned a 116 speed figure on the Briss scale. McKinsey's never hit 116 for his entire career.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, I mean, if we run back to what we did in the Suburban, if he ever could improve, I don't know. But, he's going to be, he'll be competitive.
Do you think he ends up on the lead here today?
I don't think, specifically Jimmy was asked that question at the barn, when NBC was over there with Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey, and asked, would you be comfortable three or four wide into the first turn, which very well could happen. I mean, he's got tactical speed out of the gate too, but, he's a neat horse, and you can see it when he's training. He'll do what you ask. You can get him up in there early. You can take him back. I mean, you saw it in the Suburban. He got there. He went to the lead, then let Catholic Boy go up because he was eager to get in the lead, and Junior just took his time with him and let him go by. And I think it'll be fine. I don't think he's going to have to be on the lead going into the first turn. And you don't want to use a horse up going into the first turn. If you can be two or three wide, that'll be fine.
He's lucky, too. He's got the outside post, so he should be able to place himself. I mean, Junior can put him where he wants to, and, you know, he doesn't have to rush. And if nobody wants a lead, he can just burst out and get over, and no problem.
And he won't fight that. You know, I mean, he's the type of horse that he can do what Junior can do what he wants with him, pretty much.
Are you already thinking Breeders' Cup Classic with this horse, or do you have to get by today first and see what happens here?
No, you got to get by what happens. You know, you start planning way ahead with these horses, it's always a kiss of death. And you know, we're just, you know, you look at history and how things happen for a reason. And, you know, we're grateful to be here. The partners have been exceptional in terms of understanding the thought process and what we were doing with this horse. And, you know, it's part of the game. You know, getting new people into the sport, it's education. And if you can educate them early and it doesn't come as a surprise, you know, the end result, whether you're in the grade one races or at least competing here at Saratoga on a consistent basis, it, they understand it, and it's rewarding.
It's really nice to have partners that know that you're going to do what's right by the horse, and they understand that, because there's a lot of people that would be really nervous or not particularly pleased that their horse is running, you know, once every 6-8 months, whether they like it or not.
and you know, the revenue stream is you know, going the wrong way most of the time. But if the horse does have the talent, he showed it. You know, anything can happen. You know, unfortunately, Thunder Snow's out of the race. And, you know,
that was a cough and a fever, by the way, is the reason he came out.
And so, you know, you got to enjoy it while it's on the up and up. And, you know, again, thanks to the partners involved. It's a great group. They understand it. You know, they're now horse people because they get it. And this horse has taught them that.
Yeah. Talking with owner Don Little Jr., Centennial Farms preservationist, going to the Post later today in the Whitney. Again, our coverage 5 to 6 Eastern time. Don, despite your poor choice in caps this morning, your polo shirt's pretty cool. You've got the Centennial Farms polo on and the tan and red colors. It's got the silks on there. Where did the tan and red come from?
Actually, it was the name came from a farm or a barn, actually, in Hamilton, Massachusetts, that when we were playing polo and Dad, you know, he's always had his passion in horses. He was renting a barn before we built one on the family property, and it just happened to have an old sign, Centennial Farms of 1892. And the colors just came from, he was looking for something conservative, not overly flashy, and the actual specifics of the color combination, I think it was just a random thing, but...
Yeah.
It does help sort of have a neat tone to it. It stands out, thanks to Julie Cronin, Colonial Affairs, in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And
they're very distinctive. They're among my favorite set of silks ever. And
it's a classy look.
Yeah, really
traditional,
cool.
Classy look, yeah.
Well, you know, you come into a partnership, you can have a shirt.
I'm not wearing the cap, though. If I got to do that, I'm out.
Well, you know, it's part of it.
Yeah, I'll give you one more omen that is working in preservationist favor today. As I was doing some research for our broadcast later this afternoon, I went back and watched that race by Colonial Affair. Chris Lincoln opened the ESPN television broadcast that day, and he referenced the fact that it was Saratoga's longest season in history at that point in 1994, 34-day meet. This is not the longest Saratoga meet in terms of days. It's 40 days, this meet. They've raced 40 days before. But it is the longest in terms of the number of weeks that they're going to run. They spaced it out. So it's another new thing for Saratoga. Maybe 25 years later, we see it happen all over again.
Well, hopefully, you know, there's a lot of things that you sort of try to look for and a little karma here and there. And, you know, I think all the saddle blankets are going to be pink today to represent Mary Lou Whitney. But if you were to take that out of the scenario, post position 8 is pink. And that's what they asked. So maybe that's a little something to look forward to. And I have to say that I'm in my 8th year of sobriety. So
good for you.
Hopefully that'll means something as well.
Yeah, good for you. Wow. Pretty special day. A lot of things pointing toward preservationists, and now he just has to step up and do it later today. Before I let you go, about a minute or so left.
Sure.
Did you get a chance to spend much time around Mary Lou?
Enough to see what a great lady she was and what she meant to this community. Actually, the day that we won the Whitney with Colonial Affair, and, you know, she had a lot of interest in polo. Of course, C.V. Whitney was a great polo player himself, and I played professional polo for 15 years, and I was fortunate enough to accept the trophy, and the two of us ran off to the polo fields here because we had to play in the Whitney Cup that day, and I think we won that game too. So it was a good Whitney day. But, and interestingly enough, you may have read that she was a big proponent and supporter of dog sled racing in the Iditarod. Well, the dog sled team that she took to her wedding was my great uncle's. So my dad's uncle, Norman Vaughn, who competed in the Iditarod, and they were quite good friends, and she went on the expedition, or supported expedition, to the South Pole in 1995. And there's a mountain named after my great uncle, and she was part of the reenactment of his expedition down there with Admiral Byrd.
Wow. That's a great story. Yeah, fantastic story. So, Don Little Jr., Centennial Farms, good luck this afternoon, my friend.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. And like all of our guests, going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that over to Don, and we'll step away for a quick break. We'll come back and wrap it up for you. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Airdrie Studs' summer front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at two, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, summer front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade one mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs' summer front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Power. Anchor Down has the lead as they turn for home. Anchor Down in front by three. Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pull. Tamar Coes can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainesway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4/5, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu. Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire and will be represented by his first crop of yearlings this year. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Welcome back. Mike Penn and Jude Fell getting ready to wrap up this Whitney edition of the Equine Forum live from Saratoga. Been a fun couple of hours. We got a chance to preview the Saratoga sale in the first half of the program with Max Hodge and Jesse Ullery from Fasig Tipton. Got a chance to visit with Heedley and Price Bell from Millridge and Nakoma. Heard from Pat Costello with our Philly Focus segment. Don't forget to stop by the Paramount consignment. Michael Dubb was here, and you just heard Don Little Jr. as well. JT, our coverage this afternoon, 5 to 6 Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates across the country, including in Albany, New York. And, of course, you can stream us worldwide at horseracingradio.net. And then our sale coverage coming up later on Monday and Tuesday night from 7 to 10 Eastern, presented by Embrace the Race and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association.
Yeah, looking forward to the sale. That's going to be fun. Great afternoon of racing, and it looks like maybe we're going to get a little lucky with the weather. The sun's shining right now.
The sun is shining. It's supposed to be a gorgeous day. The main track is fast. The turf is firm. Come on out and enjoy it. If you can't, make sure you tune in to us at 5 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. Don't forget to visit us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Our poll question today was, is the Whitney winner, the Breeders' Cup Classic winner, racing in today's Whitney? And 67% of the vote saying, nope, not in this field today. Well, we will find out. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for my beautiful wife, Michelle, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you later today on HRN. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.